Hello and welcome back to the Pinstripe Podcast. Scotty, last week that we have to do this over Zoom, what's going on?
It's a weird week, cold week, first really cold week.
Yeah, it got real cold here. Wednesday, it was, I think, at the warmest 19 degrees up here. So I definitely feel you on the cold.
Yeah. I haven't left the house.
But this is Scotty and I's last time doing this over Zoom for a while. I go home on Tuesday for a very, very, very extended winter break. I leave on Tuesday and I don't return to Boston until January 19th. So we will have quite a few weeks that we get to actually do this in person, which kind of seems weird. Like we haven't done that.
No.
I think we've definitely done obviously more episodes over Zoom than in person. Oh, yeah. I think in person we might have done 4.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds about right.
And maybe we had a lot of technical issues.
And a lot of different settings too.
Mom just hit
down the beach.
Yeah, down the beach. That one. To explain it very briefly, I by mistakenly bought 2 USB microphones when you can only have 1 USB microphone plugged into a computer at a time, or else like it doesn't hear it. So the only way that we could solve it was that Scotty's microphone was the A microphone, so he could talk regularly, and I had to literally scream into my microphone for an hour. It was a mess, but we did it. But the two of us have come up with a plan to make it work when we go home. We'll have to give it a few tries before we record next week, but we also have to figure out when we're recording next week because next Thursday is Thanksgiving. Anyway, we'll worry about that when we get there. Before we get into our team of the week, we are going to hit on some general baseball news, then some Yankee news, then our team. All right. So we are going to start off with what we told you we were going to start off with last week, because we do not lie. We are talking about MV Freddie Freeman. I don't think I have ever been so happy for a non-Yankee to win an award.
I feel like that was an award that nobody really can be mad about.
Oh, 0 people are mad that he won.
I feel like people like wanted Mookie to win, but then they see that Freeman wins and they're like, yeah. Freeman.
And you're like, oh, he's the best person on the planet.
You can't be upset that he won. You can like not be happy that your guy won, but you can't be upset that he was the one that won.
Exactly. That's the best way to put it. Like, there are people, like, obviously there are players that I don't like. I'm very vocal about my hate for Alex Verdugo. We all been new. But, like, and there are, like, some people just don't like certain players. I don't think there's a single person who doesn't like Freddie Freeman. Like, no. He's just a good person. I say that like I know him, but.
The only time that I'd feel like somebody wouldn't like him is because they think he's too nice. They'd be like, there's something
it's
up
like,
with
it's like, it's like a fake nice. You're like, there's gotta be something. But I mean, I have advocated for Freddie Freeman all year. He really went off this year. I'm so happy for him. Obviously I've said this before. If I have to pick a team in the National League, I pick the Atlanta Braves without a question. And Freddie Freeman is a great leader on that team and is really, really just doing it. I don't know how else to put it. So yeah. that was good news. Of course, yeah, we talked about it. Like Mookie would have been, like he had a great season, obviously. But I mean, we've talked about it before. I love when like the non-super big names win. Just like how I wanted it to be a Braves-Rays World Series, because those are just, they're smaller markets.
A big thing like that is it's MVP, it's most valuable player.
Yeah.
And Mookie, he's on a team with a lot of other weapons that are also just like
exactly.
I mean, what you're really putting most valuable on a guy on a team like that is kind of difficult. I mean, I feel like Freddie Freeman with the Braves, especially with how the Braves were this year. I mean, they had rough with injuries all around, everything like that. So I mean,
yeah, I don't think that the Braves would have been where they were this season without Freddie Freeman, while the Dodgers have clearly shown past success without Mookie Betts.
Yes.
Like, sure, was he like that last piece they needed? Maybe, but like
the whole regular season. It's a regular season award.
Exactly.
I mean, I feel like the Dodgers would have been in the exact same place through the regular season with a win or two here or there, something like that, but like nothing big.
But Freddie Freeman to the Braves is like, that's their thing. So yes, in this house, we are very happy. And I think many people across the entire league are very happy for Freddie Freeman because it was just the one award that he was missing. You know, he has a Silver Slugger. He has a bunch of gold gloves. He just needed that MVP.
And it was those two grand slams or whatever he got.
Yeah. And now he just needs a World Series win. Just give him that ring. And then he is just perfection. The biggest baseball news of
I'm going to say something before this because I know what you're going to say and I want to put something a little slide thing before we go on this longer one. You're going to be talking about the executive decision of a team. I'm going to be talking about a different executive decision. Cubs, Theo Epstein of the Cubs stepped down as president of baseball operations there. He was a big part. Yes. I mean, he hit them with their World Series. I mean, that's
good point. I totally forgot to take a note of this. Did you see his why he was stepped down?
I didn't look too much into it.
So I don't know if this is verbatim what he said or why he was stepping down, but he made it seem like he does not like the way that baseball is moving towards this highly analytical sport. And he felt that he was doing too much to bring the Cubs to that place and felt that he respected the game too much. So he stepped away from it. I don't know if that's the only reason he stepped down. I haven't read into it much, but I definitely saw that quote about how he felt that he was kind of enabling this move away from the classic game of baseball and decided to step away from that. Of course, there are probably other reasons, but...
Well, yeah, no, that's, I mean, he's somebody that, I see, a lot of people respected him for it. I mean, he did it respectfully. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any hate. It wasn't, people forcing him out of there. He did it, he was like, hey, I'm taking this. I'm taking my step down. Everybody's like, thank you. Hey, you did a great job.
Which is why, maybe the reasoning that he said was, genuine. And, he did honestly feel like baseball is moving in a direction that he didn't support. But I thought that was very interesting to hear an executive being that's not how the game is supposed to go.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I don't absolutely love analytical baseball, but I think it's interesting to see someone from the Cubs. Of course, I haven't stared at the Cubs much, but when I think of analytical baseball, I think of the Rays. Obviously, I think many, many people do. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That was just an interesting quote that I saw from him on the, on the train of baseball executives, the biggest baseball news of the decade of ever is the hiring of Kim Ng as the Marlins general manager.
Derek Jeter making big moves still.
I have literally never been so happy in my entire life. First of all, did you know that the Marlins front office is two women and Derek Jeter?
The one I didn't know is how much she has done in this league.
Her resume is ridiculous. So she started as an intern for the White Sox. Then she was assistant GM. Obviously there were many, many steps between this. She was an assistant GM with New York. That's where she met Derek Jeter. Mm-hmm. She was vice president of baseball operations, I think within the commissioner's office. I think something like that. And now, obviously, the not only the first woman, but also the first Asian American general manager of a major league team. She is the first female general manager of any of the big four sports. This is such a huge moment in the entire world. I'm literally I cannot contain my joy.
I mean, just go over what you said, basically. She interned with the Chicago White Sox at first, and then assistant director of baseball operations with the Yankees. She was the assistant general manager. Got 3 rings out of that.
Yeah.
She went over to the Dodgers and was the vice president and assistant GM. And then with the commissioner's office, she was senior vice president of baseball operations. So she was doing big things before. This is all just as big, if not bigger.
Her resume is absolutely ridiculous. And I, like, when I read that she was the general manager, like, obviously as a woman in sports, I think I almost cried. Like, it was just, like, such a, like, the moment and the emotions that came with it, like, it was crazy. So not only is she ridiculously qualified and talented, she's walking into such a great system and organization that, like, this makes the Marlins, I think, even more of a competitor than we've previously kind of thought. Like, she knows what she's doing. The partners that she's with, the club that she is within, like, the Marlins, could we say they are competitors now for, like, a long time coming?
They were such a bully team. They were a team that you just go and bash on. And
literally
in 1 year, in one pandemic, they just went and just switched. Everything was planned. It just, everything just crumbled down of what you thought about them, and they're a whole new team.
Yeah. I don't think there are, like, enough words that I can say as a girl looking to work in sports. Like, there are not enough thank yous and just things to say to Miss Ng. She's just, of course, there is so much work still to be done. You know, there's so many different places in sports for women, but this is such a wonderful and massive stride. And I literally cannot wait. Like, is it bad for me to say that I want them to win the World Series? Like, I think that would be so great. I think this was, like, an awesome, like, slap in the face to so many, like, anybody who has ever said that women, like, can't work in sports. I definitely heard a few very shitty comments around school when people heard she was hired. But I mean, I could talk about this forever. I don't want to hark on it for the entire episode, but I can't even express how amazing this is, how happy I am. And I can't wait to see so many more women in sports.
Now, do I think that it's a bit of a stretch to say that you want them to win a World Series? Give it a few years, all right? Give the Yankees a bit of a chance.
If the Yankees win this coming year,
then you can.
And then the Marlins win the year after, then I'm okay.
You have some business to get through first before you go and start rooting for other teams.
I'm not rooting for the Marlins. I am rooting for Kim Ng. Let's put it that way. I watched her press conference. Her press conference was so great. She was like, it reminded me, I don't know, Scotty, if you watched Kamala Harris's, like, winning, like, acceptance speech, but she talked about how now young girls can look to the White House and, like, see themselves there. Kim Ng kind of gave a very similar idea of, like, now little girls can look up and see me here. And it was just, it's been a very powerful few weeks for women, and please let us have our moment. It was, I'm just so happy. Before we jump into direct Yankee conversation, we're gonna talk, what are you winging your finger
about? I want to say one thing before we got into any Yankee thing. I want to just get a nice Trevor Bauer update.
Bauer update.
Trevor Bauer, he's loving life right now, being Cy Young winner, bragging in everybody's face. He posted a thing on Twitter of him changing his bio. But I found this, and I found this multiple times, so I think it's a lot more credible. Apparently, back in 2018, Trevor Bauer made a bet with his friends stating that he will never sign a multi-year deal.
Oh, that's fantastic. And
if he did sign a multi-year deal, his friend gets to shoot him in the nuts with a paintball gun from 10 feet away.
I just...
So there's it's a real bet. It seems like a pretty real bet.
Ah, great. Love to see it.
That is
always love it. Always love a good old,
you could say.
Always love a good old Bauer update. But on to the pinstripes. We're going to start with someone who used to be a Yankee, is no longer a Yankee. We're grateful he's no longer a Yankee because Robinson Cano has again tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. There is the announcement on our Instagram, if you want to go follow it, pinstripe.podcast. It's set up. It's made. We're grinding away. This one hit me hard. I'm not going to lie. This is the second time he has failed a test.
I'm honestly not surprised. The man's like 39. I don't know how old he is. He's getting old. He needs them.
It's just the reason that I'm upset about it is, so I'm left-handed. So growing up, whenever my dad wanted to like explain like a swing that I should like follow after and like try to be like, it was always Robinson Cano's because his swing is so easy and beautiful. But now I'm like, okay, if I copied that, like, would I also need the drugs to be good? Like, it didn't make sense to me. And the only time he has failed PED tests is when he was not a Yankee, I believe. I'm not sure.
I was going to say a big thing with him, I feel like when he was a lot different of a player with the Yankees and he was with the Mets now. And I don't even think that's just him. I think that's just how baseball's moved. I mean, he went from a lot more of this contact hitter that we like to talk about to more, he realizes that he needs to move into more of this power.
True.
Pure power kind of swing. So he kind of changed his game like that. I mean, he looks a lot bigger now than he did when he was with the Yankees. And I mean, that might be age, that might be what he's trying to do to himself. But I mean, I feel like he's changed a lot. And I feel like that might have influenced it a bit.
That's a good point. He is definitely a different player than he was as a Yankee, which is upsetting because he was a great Yankee. I honestly don't know why he didn't end his career after he left the Yankees. Like, I don't want to sound like
he was still mean. Young. I feel like there would have been 2 years, but I feel like I do think he's gone for a bit too long.
But so I think that this really takes him off any ballot to ever be put in any sort of Hall of Fame, which, I mean, is upsetting. I think he's one of the best lefty swings of our time. You know, it's just so simple, so easy, and it's upsetting to see. But sometimes people just don't think, and they put that over the integrity of the game, and it's upsetting, but he deserves the punishment, I think.
Yep.
I did see a tweet, however, that I did agree with and I did not love, is that there are still people that get more punishment for taking performance-enhancing drugs than anybody else. What the hell was that?
I was talking Astros. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, yeah. So he's gotten in trouble more than the team that cheated the entire sport, and also literal criminals who hit their domestic partners. So baseball, hi. There are just like some little things. Like, I love the majority of you, baseball, like 97% of you and your organization, I love, but there's just like 3% of you that is oh so problematic. But sad, but deserves the punishment. Next up in Yankee news, in case you haven't heard, we still don't have a DJ LeMahieu contract.
No, you haven't heard. That's the thing.
I'm getting so, 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 so nervous. It's making me want to pull my hair out. Hopefully next week or like today after we record, there's a DJ contract. So as of 2:33 on Thursday, November 19th, we have no DJ contract. Hopefully that changes. Luke Voit did speak on it. He said that he is 100% convinced that DJ is going to be a Yankee for the rest of his career. So that's now DJ and Luke saying that they feel like he will be a Yankee forever. Luke Voit also did say that he like fixed his foot issue in case anyone was concerned. But
Nobody's, you know, right now, because he didn't have to run that much. All
right. True. Right now, I'm just nervous because it's a lot of talk of people saying that they think he's going to be a Yankee, but I really, 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 really just wanted in paper.
Derek's also said he was going to be a Red Sox. So, I mean, you can't ever trust, can't always trust it.
Great point. Great point. Mookie Betts did think that he was going to be a Red Sox for the rest of his career, and now he's spending it in blue. So I'm just like a little nervous all the time around DJ LeMahieu. One other thing that Scotty and I wanted to talk about is the assistance that our starting rotation is going to need this year, because the Yes Network came out with the Yankees projected rotation, and it is obviously Gerrit Cole, Luis Severino, who is recovering from Tommy John surgery, Jordan Montgomery, Devi Garcia, and Clark Schmidt. Ah, okay. Do you have things to say on this, or do you want me to start?
I'll start. I mean, there's a few there that I'm not, that, you know, I was kind of surprised I'm not seeing. Tanaka's there, not there, I should say.
Well, because we still don't have a contract with him, so I guess they can't project it.
I mean, I guess this is just them going and going. They're safe.
Have you seen there's rumors that he might go to Queens?
I did not. All I've been seeing.
That's the, I mean, again, these are just rumors.
For some reason, I've been seeing him while he, like, people were talking about him when he was in Japan. When he was, or, yes, I think it was, when he was still in that league, he was like, yeah, you know, the look at what he did in the World Series over in Japan. I'm like, why am I getting
that
this?
That was 9 years ago.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like this is probably really, really based off of what they have now.
They just re-signed or extended Montgomery. They obviously know Gerrit Cole's there forever. Sevy's not going anywhere. Devi and Clark Schmidt aren't going anywhere. But my concern was, one, Sevy is still recovering from Tommy John. I don't think we have a set date for when he is returning. Yeah. The other concern, listen, I have spoken very highly of Devi Garcia and of Clark Schmidt. Clark Schmidt has about 7 major league innings, and I don't think Devi has significantly more than like 5 games. You know, yeah. I trust their ability. They just don't have
the experience.
The experience, like, I can deal with Devi.
Go and put your main rotation having 2 of those players.
Yeah, if we had just Devi. And then Clark Schmidt was, I don't know, like a middle reliever or an option maybe later in the year, I'd be fine. But it's the fact that we have Gerrit Cole, no problem with Gerrit Cole. Luis Severino, who we don't know when is returning. Jordan Montgomery, who did all right this year, had some rough starts, but I don't have as many issues. And then 2 very young and inexperienced guys. So this... we need to pursue a starting pitcher. Right now, to have that be our starting rotation is concerning. So we definitely, definitely need to be on the hunt. I think, listen, everybody is really obsessed with this Francisco Lindor hunt. I don't think we need him. I think what we need is pitching.
Yeah.
And if we need bats, we need left-handed bats. You know, we're very right-handed heavy. But I think to start off, we need pitching.
We need to solidify. Because, yeah, as we're saying, I mean, 100% we're going to get one pitcher who will, I can't say it, almost 100% be above 500. And that's Gerrit Cole.
We need to win the Gerrit Cole games.
But that is all that we know. We have no clue how the rest of the 4 games are going to go in the series. We have no idea because, as we said, we don't know Severino. Montgomery, he was on the fence last year. Mm-hmm. There were 2 new ones. We don't know how they're going to play. I mean, you can't really be confident as much in your team with a lineup like that.
Exactly. And I agree. So as much as I'm sure we would all love Francisco Lindor, I think Yankee fans are very big on saying that we're going to pick up every single superstar.
Everybody.
I don't know if he, like, last year, Gerrit Cole was a must get. You know, last offseason, that was a necessary get. And this year, we still need to be on the mindset of a pitcher is a necessary get. Mm-hmm. Listen, I voiced a lot of concerns about Gleyber at shortstop. I understand he was a little bit frustrating this year. I don't think that means that, because, I mean, we've talked about this before. You get Lindor, okay, what? Then you move Gleyber to second, okay. Then you move DJ to first, and then you get rid of the guy who led the league in home runs. Or yeah. Do you move Gleyber to short or second, keep Luke Voit, and get rid of the best hitter in baseball? It's just, it's the reason that we got rid of DD last year. We have too many infielders. We don't need to go and get another one. But that's that on that. I think we've talked about Francisco Lindor before. Do you have more to say?
No, so this is just a few days ago. And actually, it was about a week ago, and I don't really get how I didn't see this and how we didn't talk about this. Eric Kratz.
Yes, I forgot.
Done. He is done. He's 40. We talked about it. We talked a lot about him during the season. We really liked him. I mean, his whole thing. I mean, this is another person that, similar to Freddie Freeman, although with not the same amount of success, it's just somebody that it's difficult for you not to like.
He did say, I think in his baseball, like in his retirement announcement, he said, the next time I'm around baseball, it's not as a player, which I think is actually nice, because we've talked about how we didn't want him to return as a catcher, but in any sort of coaching or like that kind of perspective, I think he'd bring a lot of really great energy to the team. But yeah, we did forget to bring up the fact that he announced his retirement.
Yeah, he went through 11 seasons. So he started mm-hmm. when he was 30. His first major league debut was he was 30.
Wow.
Nine teams. He was with wow. nine different teams. And he never played over 100 games in any of those seasons. He was always just this little kind of nobody, but also helped every team that he was on. I mean, that's it.
Did you see
baseball? Talking
did you see the video of him getting absolutely trucked by Chipper Jones and holding like on to the ball?
People. He's gotten trucked by four people. Yeah, he's played with like the Brewers, the Phillies, the Yankees, the Giants. He's done these little things for like every team. I mean, he went and he played for the Blue Jays too. I mean, he goes and he was like just this little piece in a lot of teams. And I mean, I feel like, you know, of course, nothing big is going to happen, but I feel like that's kind of like a big special thing for like everybody. It's kind of like, hey, you know, this is a guy who's like never really wanted to start anything. He kind of knew his place was a little bit mm-hmm. lower, and every situation he made the most of. I mean, he helped him like from just watching the video, he made like friggin' like four walk-offs in like,
yeah. I mean,
for not having 100 games a year. That's pretty dang amazing.
Yeah, it is. You know, we talked about him. We like his energy and everything, but I hope that he finds some sort of coaching position to pursue.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Debbie was a great example of that. Just finding that position to just
somewhere to be like a mentor.
Yeah, like a mentor, like somebody who could kind of, you know, give younger players that idea of, hey, what the league's like. Although
if we could give him,
he's not this big
whatever position CC Sabathia holds right now,
yeah,
if we can like have the two of them work that'd be great.
Yeah, like kind of just be there for them and help them through it, because I mean, although Eric Kratz won't be able to do a lot, but I mean, he helped Debbie. So like Debbie's yeah. an amazing example of it. It helped him so much get into the league, and he just felt so much more welcome with a catcher like Eric Kratz alongside him.
100%. So I know that we've definitely talked a lot more in the beginning of this episode than any of our other team breakdowns. We definitely could have made this two episodes, but to be quite honest, I don't have much to say about the team that we are doing this week. So hopefully it'll be a little bit of a, I don't want to say a rushed breakdown, but we definitely don't have as much additional little tidbits of information. We are talking about the Baltimore Orioles. Fun fact, earlier this week, I spoke with one of their play-by-play announcers, Melanie Newman. She's one of the only female play-by-play announcers in the league. Great lady. She's fantastic. Awesome to see again women in sports in positions that are predominantly run by men right now. So go Melanie. This year, they had a 25-35 record that placed them fourth in the American League East. They are managed by Brandon Hyde, and they play at, I think, one of the most beautiful parks is Oriole Park at Camden Yards. She's beautiful.
I think it's such a nice field. The
Camden
field
Yards is, I've gone to, yeah, it's just, it's a beautiful setup. Baltimore's gorgeous.
It's a good amount of just like the sport and the history and incorporating other sports. I mean, you're right around every other, I mean, that's Baltimore. They're all right around each other. All the
yeah, it's fantastic. Other than Fenway, I think Baltimore, like I think Camden Yards is the park that I've been to the most besides Fenway, which is kind of crazy saying that I'm a Yankee fan and I've only been to Yankee Stadium two times. But let's jump right into their offensive stats. Genuinely, I was writing these names down and I did not recognize a single one except for their 10th man, simply because he looks like he should be in a boy band. We're going to stop. What? I remember him coming in the Yankee game and I was like, who is this man with bleach blonde hair and a Justin Bieber cut? It's their 10th man. All right. We're going to start with their catcher, Pedro Severino, 26 years old, played in 48 games and swung a 250, 322, and 388. At first base, we have Renato Nunez, not what's his face, who everybody was waiting for him to hit the ball last year. And why can't I think of his name?
Chris Davis.
Yeah, he did not play many games this year. I think he had 14. Nunez on the other hand.
Probably both, but
Nunez on the other hand is 26 years old, played in 52 games. He led the team in home runs with 12 and swung a 256, 324, and 492. Their second baseman is Hanser Alberto, 27 years old, 54 games. He had the most hits with 62, and he swung a 283, 306, and 393. Their shortstop is Andrew Velasquez, 25 years old, 40 games. He only had 63 at-bats, however, which kind of confused me because he played in 40 games, but only had 63 at-bats. But he swung a 159, 274, and 206. So I guess I kind of understand. But their third baseman is Rio Ruiz, 26 years old, 54 games. He was tied to lead the team in RBIs with 32, swung a 222, 286, 427. Their left fielder is Ryan Mountcastle, 23 years old, 35 games, swung a 333. I hate the number three. I say it wrong, and I know I do, so I'm very sorry about that number. 386 and a 492. Cedric Mullins plays center field for the O's. He is 25 years old. He has the most stolen bases on the team with 7 and swung a 271, 315, and 407. Anthony Santander is their big offensive powerhouse. He's 25 years old, only got to play in 37 games. However, he is tied with the RBIs with Ruiz with 32, 261, 315, and 57. So, I mean, he was tied with Ruiz through almost 20 less games. So if he played all 60 or 55 of them, he would have produced quite a bit for them. Their DH is Jose Iglesias, 30 years old, 39 games, 373, 400, and 556. And their 10th man is Mr. Boyband himself, Pat Valica, 27-year-old infielder who played in 52 games, 277, 315, 475. Before I grab into their team slash, one thing that I noticed about the Orioles is that they managed to stay healthy and practically their entire starting lineup was able to play 90% of the season.
They were just thinking through injuries. They were like, we just don't want to get hurt. We don't have to win. We just don't get hurt.
So like, it seems like it's a trade-off in the American League. You're either able to win, but no one stays healthy, or you stay healthy and you don't win. So I wish we had their ability to stay healthy, our ability to win games, and there it is. there's the winning team. Their team slash for the year was 258, which put them third in the American League, 321, which put them eighth, and then 429, which put them sixth. So like I said, I have literally no idea who's on the Orioles. I'm sorry. I've never really paid much attention to them. Obviously, they came in fourth place this year, so they weren't the worst team in the American League East. Looking at you, Boston, looking at you. But, you know, still not always the biggest competitor in the American League. Them getting rid of Manny Machado, I think, pissed the entire state of Maryland off.
But, I mean, also so did Manny Machado. But, I mean...
You think Manny was mad that he left?
No, I'm just saying Manny Machado himself pissed the whole
The entire state of like Maryland, Virginia, DC, they all despise the man. I don't blame them. I'm also not his biggest fan either. But big that was their name. Obviously, we all know that. Last year, I think they were more so in the headlines for people waiting for Chris Davis to hit the ball than any news about the performance of the team. But you know what? They're trying their best.
I feel like their thing is going to, they're trying to be a kind of like a Marlins, kind of like, hey, we're not really pulling these big names. We're more there because they're a relatively young team. They're not.
They're pretty young.
They're not out here trying to make these big moves on players, but I feel like I might also be their market. They're a pretty small market team. They're not this huge market team that can pull anybody that they want to. But I mean,
could you imagine if Trevor Bauer ends up there?
He's going at
I can't even picture him in white and orange.
I see him. I just see him always in the very, very angry face. Always.
Oh my God. Could you imagine? He's like, Ed, where I decide to sign for 2021. The Baltimore Orioles. Oh boy, that would be funny. I'm sorry, Baltimore fans. I'm sure you're great people, and I'm sure they're a fun team to follow. And if they want to give me a job, I'll take it. But you guys are waiting. You guys have Lamar Jackson for football. Like, it's okay. You guys aren't like absolutely terrible for sports. You don't have a basketball team.
And they're not filthy.
But you've got Lamar Jackson, so you've got hope. Sorry, my head's been on basketball all week. It's been all over. Like, it's been so weird. I don't think about the NBA like at all. It's just not like my absolute favorite league in the world. But obviously with a bajillion and one trades going on, and I can't even pick which one like blew my mind the most. I do think the Phoenix Suns trade really blew my mind. I think James Harden and Russell Westbrook both wanting to get out of Houston blows my mind. I hope James Harden goes to the Nets. That'd be great. But and then the draft was last night. Did you see that Klay Thompson just tore his Achilles?
I did.
So
I read about that. I didn't really hear much about it. Because
NBA fans, it's been quite a week for you guys. Yeah. All we've been doing is Googling the wonderful Baltimore Orioles. So, Scotty.
I don't care about the NBA until the Nets start doing stuff.
So, Scotty, if you want to hit us with some absolutely exciting pitching news.
I want to make sure I finish up saying about NBA. I always like to tell people, I'm not a Brooklyn Nets fan. I'm a New Jersey Nets fan. But
whenever people are like, oh, you're a Giants and Yankees fan, you must be a Knicks fan. I'm like, no. I am a Yankees, Giants, Nets fan. And they're like, why? Why would you do that to yourself? I go, first of all, why would anybody want to be a Knicks fan right now? Let's draw that line.
Neither really have its pros. I mean,
and I'm like, the Nets used to be in New Jersey. Now we have Kyrie and KD. I have a lot of hope for that. I have a lot of faith in that. Okay. We've got like, anyway, this is not a basketball podcast. Talk about pitching.
All right. So the Baltimore Orioles, pitching wise, really wasn't awful. I mean, were they good? No, but I mean, they weren't They weren't bottom of the board. I mean,
think that's them across the board. Is like they're not.
They're lower.
Like they're not absolutely horrendous, but you're competing with the top three teams in the American League are very competitive.
Yeah, they're not doing terrible like last week with the Red Sox with them being 13, 14, and 15 in like five categories. But their team stats, they have a 4.51 ERA, not terrible. 11 saves on the year. Just saying, last week I talked about Matt Barnes for the Red Sox. He had 9 saves by himself. So that's just one thing. They had 260 earned runs, which is pretty. Hold on.
I thought you just said they had 260 earned runs.
I think I might be looking at the wrong number. I feel that was a big one.
There's no way.
Anyways, whatever the heck, I don't know where that number came from. I'm looking at it now too, and I'm like, that doesn't look right at all. That doesn't look
close. Now I'm looking. Team pitching, earned runs. Where are you? 260.
Okay, yeah. I was like, that doesn't look right. Well, I'm looking at it, but I mean, yeah.
That's wow.
So they were 9th in most categories that they had. So this was 9th in all of the American League. Most hitting categories, so like hits, doubles, everything like that. They were 9th, which
middle bottom, of the pack, bottom, I mean, middle.
You're right at the bottom third, but you're not in the bottom.
You're like the top of the bottom third.
Yeah, exactly. So their low category was in strikeouts. They came in 13th in the American League with 487.
Tough.
Still, that's just a big number to think about. I mean,
I don't know why baseball
as a whole, but like,
I don't know why 260 caught me so off guard. I was like,
it doesn't look right.
I was like, the zoom must have skipped. Did you say 60?
Yeah. So then going through their, I have their number one pitcher, their number two pitcher, and the closing pitcher. So the number one pitcher, Alex Cobb, 32 years old. He's had a 9-year career.
The name sounds familiar.
This is his, he has one more with the Orioles. So he's a 2021 season with the Orioles. And then he's on then his contract ends. He ended with a 4.3 ERA through 10 starts, gave up 8 home runs, 18 walks, 38 Ks in 52 innings. So pretty average thing all around. As I said, 4.3 ERA, that's just below the team ERA. I mean, nothing bad, nothing terrible all around. 38 Ks to 18 walks, that's probably the one thing. 20 difference, that's still pretty good though. Their number two pitcher, John Means, he's 27. This is his third year in the league. He just finished his third year in the league. He has 1 year until he's eligible for his contract, and then in 2025 he's free. So
he's free.
No, he's a free agent in 2025. Also 10 games, 10 starts, 4.53 ERA, 22 earned runs, 12 home runs, and the big numbers here, 42 Ks to 7 walks. Real solid.
That's really good. Yeah.
That's a real solid spread there. And so that was our number two pitcher. He's relatively young. That's the one thing that's different between the offense and the pitching is the pitching is 25 and up. 26 and up, but I feel like that's also like, pitching in general.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think you'd actually prefer that
starter, or you're gonna be a little bit older.
Exactly, because like, I mean, we were just talking about it with the Yankees, like, do you really want two 21 22 year old starting pitchers? Like,
yeah,
I'd rather them be, you know, 25 26 with like two seasons under their belt, three seasons under their belt, and then I'm like, yeah, you can be my starting pitcher, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe the maturity in that position isn't a problem.
Yeah. And then again, just with the two stats that really stood out for me with him was the 22 earned runs and 12 home runs. So 10 runs weren't home runs.
Or they could have all been home runs and they were not solo home runs.
So
didn't think of that one.
There was 22. That 10 difference there. That's just the big
Could you imagine if the only runs you gave up were on home runs?
That's just kind of sad.
I don't know, like, if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it.
You're just giving up. Like, it's just one bad pitch.
Yeah. But I mean, they're big bad pitches.
They're very big bad pitches, but.
And then closer, Cole Sulzer, he's 30. I could not find his contract. I couldn't find it on Baseball Reference. I couldn't find it on Wikipedia.
That's so weird.
He got picked up off of waivers. I think he's on the Blue Jays. So he's just kind of like somebody who's getting tossed around a bit. So I have no idea if he's closing. I don't know
what's happening. I think if you pick someone off waivers, I don't think they get a contract. Like, I think you just like pick them up, give them like $25 and a meal, and they're like, put your uniform on.
So he went, and as a closer, is a bit rough. 5.56 ERA through 22 innings, 14 earned runs, 2 home runs. Not bad. 17
yeah, not,
walks.
Not bad to at all. Ks. 17 walks to 19 Ks?
Yes.
That's a tight number.
That is a tight number in general, never mind as a closer.
Yeah, that's tough.
That is very tough as a closer to go and give up 17 walks and only strike out 19. I mean, I get you don't have as many opportunities, but 17 walks.
17 walks is a lot as a closer. That's not really something.
The starting pitcher has more innings, I'm going to say. I didn't find John.
I'd assume your starting pitcher has more innings than your closer, yeah.
He has less walks.
Yeah, so that's not great.
Both of the starters I talked about actually have less walks than him. So, I mean.
That's not fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, not that's probably the one big thing. And then I kept bringing up the contract because they're kind of closing out. I mean, you can't really say they should go and look for these pitchers because, as I said, Alex Cobby is one more until he's on agency. John Means, he's eligible next year. So, I mean, you don't want to be going and stretching and wasting money. And then you have these pitchers that like are doing well for you and you kind of have lost them.
Yeah. It's again, I mean, we've talked about this before. I don't know how comfortable you are with contracts. I definitely don't know the first thing about contract building and package building, but it's definitely a science. Their pitching doesn't seem horrendous. It seems like I think top of the bottom third is the best way to explain them. That closer's just got to cut down his walks.
Yeah.
Are those all your pitching notes?
That's all the pitching notes that I have on the Orioles. So, you know, just
overall. All right, let's see if these guys have any hope in their farm system. Their top prospect is Adler Rutschman. He is a 22-year-old catcher from Oregon State. This guy and the last guy I'm going to talk about seem to be, to me, the two most interesting and kind of hopeful prospects for them. So Rutschman won the College World Series and Most Outstanding Player Award in his sophomore year. That year he was also with Team USA. In his junior year at Oregon State, he hit over 400 with 17 home runs, won the Golden Spikes Award and the Dick Houser Award. The Orioles then signed him for a record $8.1 million bonus. That's crazy.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. He's a switch hitter. He has really strong plate discipline, and he has great power from both sides. He doesn't seem to have a favor of either side. Behind the dish, he calls games very well, great hands, very active and athletic back there, and has a really great arm. So I think this guy is someone that they can definitely look to. Their catcher right now, Pedro Severino, is 26. So again, I mean, age and catchers, that's the one position to me you always kind of rotate out sooner because your body just physically can't do that anymore. So I think it's good for them to have this very hopeful catcher in their system. Number two is Grayson Rodriguez. He is a 20-year-old right-handed pitcher. He's got 4 very strong pitches. His fastball tops out at 97, and his breaking balls are quite strong. His slider hits in the low 80s, curve gracing the 70s. So he's definitely got some good, like, speed dimension and stuff like that. His changeup has become his second best pitch. He's most comfortable throwing it to lefties, but has been able to start getting it to work on righties. The projection right now is for him to be a frontline starter. So hopefully he can help pick up their pitching situation.
Just a little bit. I mean, as we said, they don't need a whole bunch. They just need a little bit of a kick.
Because they're not going to get, as much as we joked, they're not going to get a Trevor Bauer. No, they're not.
They're not going to get these top. They're not going to get anybody in the top names.
So if they can work someone through their farm system that can be okay for them, then do it. The next one, I know I am going to pronounce his last name wrong. Heston Kjerstad.
It goes. Oh, I can imagine how that's
his last name goes KJE. R-S-T-A-D. I don't know if it's like the K is like in knife and it's just pronounced Jerstad.
Yeah, I don't know.
Fake. I don't know. He is a 21-year-old outfielder. He, as a freshman, he had a record 14 home runs at Arkansas. And then he said, I'm actually going to break that record my sophomore year and hit 17. Yeah. He is the best left-handed bat in his class because of speed. And that allows him to really be able to effectively hit to all fields. The one thing that they are concerned about is that he either hits the ball a mile or he strikes out. So they want him
pretty well in the MLB.
That makes him fit in the MLB very well. Correct. But they do want him to get a little bit more disciplined, but with his power and his strong arm and his, I don't know how to put this, strong suit, not being the bases speed wise.
You know, that's all
right. They feel that that puts him as a perfect right fielder in the future. I mean, I just get excited whenever people say that people have a good left-handed swing because I love a good left-handed swing. Next up is DL Hall, who is a left-handed 22-year-old pitcher. He started slow in his debut in the South Atlantic and then the Carolina League. But, ew, I just like stuttered through the word league. That was gross. I was like, leagues. But the reason he was able to move up is because he had eventual dominance in each. He is continuing to add velocity to his fastball literally every day. He right now averages 95, but does often hit 97. In the futures game, he was averaging 96 to 98 on his fastball. So he'll definitely be able to put quite a bit of oomph behind that one. His changeup is his best secondary, but has a really nasty curveball as well. Overall, the report was that he just needs innings to make him comfortable. He hasn't been able to get 100 innings in a season yet, but they're looking for him to be a mid-rotation starter whenever he can get that experience under his belt. So again, a pitcher, just get him innings and experience and he'll be able to hop in there and assist their rotation. This last guy, Scotty, pay attention because this guy, I think, will be in the league, if not 2021, definitely 2022. His name is Ryan Mountcastle. He's a first baseman and an outfielder. He's 23 years old. So
who was their left fielder?
Who was their left fielder?
Yeah.
Ryan Mountcastle. Oh my god, it's the same guy! Oh my god! How did I not like, notice that?
I was like, I remember that name from watching the games, like a Mountcastle. I thought it was pretty young and I was like, Mountcastle, okay, yeah.
How did I not? I'm literally such an idiot. Okay. Well, he made it into the league in 2020. Which is actually huge because just get ready to hear all about him. Oh my God. I feel like such an idiot. I did this yesterday. Yesterday was the absolute worst day of my life. I was working from 12 PM to no shit straight through 12 midnight.
Nice.
Anyway, Ryan Mountcastle, let me hit you with so much information about him, even though I already said his name earlier. So technically he is listed as a first baseman and an outfielder. He is 23 years old. He was drafted out of high school in 2015 and was already in AA by the time he was 20, 2 years later. Wow. Crazy. He was MVP of the AAA International League in 2019 and was also the Orioles Brooks Robinson Minor League Player of the Year because this man's can hit.
He's just kicking up the league.
Any field, any level, this guy hits. So in 2019, he hit a really great groove in his career with highs in home runs, RBIs, and slugging. So that obviously drew the attention of the big league team since he ended up there this year. He can transform. They think he can transform into a player who can hit for both power and average if he just works on his plate discipline just a little bit. What I'm in, what drew my mind is that he was originally actually drafted as a shortstop.
What?
Then they moved him to third base, but was brought to the right side as a first baseman because of his arms and his limited range. And now obviously he's playing left field.
What the heck?
But there was literally a quote from either their general manager or their manager, and pretty much said that the big league team was going to do whatever they needed to get him onto the big league lineup, which obviously they did as he played 35 games up there. I feel like an idiot, but Ryan Mountcastle is the only name that I'm going to remember on the Orioles, I think, for a very long time. But
that's a lot of moves. Shortstop to third, to first to left. Short to third makes sense. First base. Okay, I guess.
Well, you understand third base, you can flip to first. Like they did that with Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Yeah, it's not as common because you normally think like, oh, bigger arm. I mean, they'll probably want to keep him over there. And then they're just like, left field. You go, what? How does he?
Where's
the connection there?
Let him go. Sorry for that brain fart. That was atrocious. Obviously, if you guys couldn't tell, we did not feel the need to do a team deep dive into the New York Yankees. We feel like we cover them enough, and we also feel that we are just a little bit biased to them. Next week, we will be doing the Tampa Bay Rays, which I'm kind of excited about.
I'm excited.
So glad that you get to do the research on Blake Snell and not me.
You just find all the bad ones.
I would 2 years like,
ago, he crashed his car.
Blake Snell, one time, hit a squirrel with his car. He's a terrible person.
65 on a math quiz.
But do you have anything else that you want to say?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So, like I said earlier, I did finally start up our Instagram page. It is at pinstripe.podcast. Weekly, obviously we'll be posting weekly kind of summaries of our episodes, but throughout the week, if anything breaks, like if Trevor Bauer signs, or if DJ LeMahieu signs, or Robinson Cano gets caught doing different drugs.
You know what? You're already talking about 21 season, just keep on going.
It will be posted there. So definitely give it a follow and some maybe behind the scenes action will be there too. If you want to chat more immediately about baseball, you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Semanchek, LexSemanchik. But that is it for this week's final Zoom episode of the Pinstripe Podcast. Ooh. Hopefully next week we can figure out all of our technical problems and we will be in the same room talking about the Tampa Bay Rays. This has been the Pinstripe Podcast. Bye.